But I think, and I know it from myself and my sons also, it's also, I think that army service gives you a lot.
This morning, I am very pleased to say that I have with me Ambassador Cohen from the Israeli Embassy. And you've been ambassador here for how long?
For 2 years now.
2 years now?
Yep.
Okay. Let's start off. Where were you? I know where you were born, I'm sure. It was Israel, right?
Yes.
Okay. So tell me, what was it like for you growing up there? Did you ever go into a kibbutz?
Well, actually, I was married in a kibbutz. My wife was born in kibbutz Nachal Oz. Was one of the kibbutzim, the communities that were attacked on October 7. So many of her friends and families, members were either murdered or kidnapped. Ooh. But I...
In the kibbutz that you were married in?
Yes. And I met her when I was in the army service, and I used to go there every weekend in this kibbutz. My kids were playing there. So I've been to a kibbutz. I was not born in a kibbutz, but I like this system of life very much.
I've heard that. Someone told me, it was what's his name? Yoav?
Yoav Kedar.
Yoav said that it's like paradise for him.
Exactly.
He loved that. But where were you born?
I was born in Bat Yam, mainly in Jaffa. Okay. I was born and raised in Bat Yam, which is a very, it's a town near Tel Aviv. Mm-hmm. It's a suburb. And then we moved to a place called Neve Monoson when I was 6 years old, near the airport of Israel, Ben Gurion Airport. I was grown by the beach.
Do you have siblings?
Yes, I do. I have a brother and a sister. I'm the older one.
You're the oldest one?
Yeah.
Okay, and who's next? Then your brother, then your sister?
My brother and then my sister.
Are you guys really close?
We are, but as I picked up almost 30 years ago a career of a diplomat, so you know, you're kind of moving around the world, so it's kind of difficult to stay.
They're not involved with the government at all?
No, they work for an airline, El Al airline company, the two of them. Now my brother left, he works for a private company, but they are in the airlines business.
Business. Yeah. So tell me, what were you like as a child? Were you more academic or were you more sports-minded? I'm thinking elementary school.
Right. I think I was half and half academic and sport. I like very much sport. I like running, I like skiing, diving, playing football and basketball. I'm crazy about NBA and English soccer. And I'm running, I'm a marathon runner, I even ran the Tokyo Marathon. So
one time or twice?
One time. I ran already 6 marathons in Paris, in Israel, and in Tokyo, and Israel several places, and many half marathons. And so I like running. I think running here in Tokyo is something great, and in Japan. So every place I go, I try to use my feet and to sit. Yeah. And but as a child, I was trying to focus also on my school, on my academic development. Wow. As I was grown up as in a family which was in the suburb, it was not the elite, let's say, schools. So it took more for me to advance myself.
What did your father do? What kind of work did your mother? And how are they doing? Are they okay?
My father and mother, they're living. I still have a grandmother. She's 98 years old.
98, okay.
Yeah, 2 days ago. She's still smoking. And
she's always smoked.
Yeah.
You always have a few people like that where they can actually, doesn't affect them. And if to take that away, it would hurt her.
Exactly. No, well, let's say, I know it's a podcast, and I know maybe others, children are looking at, don't smoke. It's not good for your health.
It's not supposed to be good, but some people can do that.
Exactly.
And also drink.
Yes.
Because there was a very famous comedian in the U.S. called George Burns, and he lived to 99. And Las Vegas said, if you make it to 100, we'll give you a million. Like, as if it wouldn't matter to him. But he made it to 99, and every night he smoked a cigar and drank a martini.
Oh, really?
So every day.
I don't know if we can recommend it to
anybody. No, I wouldn't recommend it. No, I don't do it.
She's great. She was the one to groom me up.
Was it your mother's mother?
My grandmother, because my mother used to work, and my mother was a teacher, and my father used to work in a factory, so... I had to be with my grandmother.
But whose mother is it? Your father's or your
mother's? My mother's mother.
Your mother's mother,
yeah,
okay.
So it's so it was fun living in there, but near the beach, near the Sea of Israel. It's a beautiful one in Bat Yam. And then we moved to Neve Monoson, and then today I live in a place called Shoham. But you asked me about the kibbutzim, the kibbutz. Kibbutz was also, I was thinking about moving to the kibbutz, but at the end.
But how old were you? How old can you be to go into a kibbutz? Don't you have
every
to
every age. You can go every age. If you, my mother wanted to go to move to the kibbutz, but my father didn't want to.
Oh, I see. But you, on your own, you have to be after you do your bar mitzvah, right?
On your own, you can move if your parents take you. But after you are 18, let's say.
That's what I'm saying. Then you can support yourself and do something.
Yeah. But when I was 18, I went to the army service. I was
a combat paramedic.
My two sons now are a combat paramedic. They are in Gaza now. And my daughter was drafted just a week ago for a unit, a special unit to work with dogs. Okay. So I have a full house, three kids in uniforms today. But that's the situation in Israel. You have to protect the country. You have to work for the country. You have to live. And that is why they are very much into it and very much dedicated for this mission.
There's a couple of countries that I think that do that, make it mandatory where you actually have to go in.
Right.
That's something I've always said that I think would be good for the United States. It's good for any country. If the people there go into the service, something's mandatory, and they have a structure, and then after they've done that for at least a year or 2 years and come out, they'll appreciate wherever they're from a lot more. When everything's taken, you see what I'm saying? Take everything away and say, now you've got to do what we tell you to do.
I agree. And you know what? People are talking sometimes about, you know, you contribute to your country, as JFK said, ask not what the country can do to you, but what you can do for the country. And this is what the Israeli youngsters are going to serve their country for 3 years. And if you're an officer, you can go for more. But I think, and I know it from myself and my sons also, it's also, I think the army service gives you a lot. Gives your soul, give your mind, give your discipline, give your friendship, give your kind of sense of a way forward that is more than just to go. You know, many in the world, you go to college, you finish 18, you go to college, you go to and then you go, you start your life, and it's fine. You know, we want to live like this as well, but it's not that. I think when people are going after the army service, they are much more mature. They know, they go to university, and they really had something, and it gave them something. They gave them something to their minds, to their responsibility, to their commitment to the country. And this is when you commit yourself to something bigger than you. I think it's marvelous.
I think so too. That happens, I think, to some people. Not all people will it work, but to some people, when they give birth, when they have a child, they realize it's not about me anymore.
Exactly.
That's another situation. I went through the military. I was drafted during Vietnam. Mm. So I went in, didn't want to go in, because in my country it wasn't a popular war at all. But after I got in, I went into the easiest branch of the service. It's called the Air Force. It's more civilian-like. But still there, the regiment they take you through, like you said, it helps you to mature. It helps to give you focus. You find out what you're made out of.
Exactly.
College doesn't do that for you.
And after you finished your army service, everything—it's not that everything is a piece of cake for you,
but it's a lot easier. But you
tell yourself, listen, I've been to wars, I've seen things, and I've done things.
Well, that's in Israel.
Exactly.
That's in yours. In Israel, yeah, mine, exactly. I didn't get to see. I shot an M16, 60 rounds one time, and that was on a training course. Then they tried to put me in special forces. But they said the divorce rate is 98%, and I was engaged. That's the only reason why I didn't go in. But that was my adaptability to the service was so much that they wanted me to be in that because that's the kind of person I would have been. Easily.
Yeah.
I still think about it every now and then. But I know there's no music in the background and it doesn't last for just 30 minutes, you know, or not 2 hours. It's forever. And some images you can't get rid of. Yeah. So were you a paramedic?
I was a combat paramedic.
Combat paramedic.
I started in the Navy and then I moved to the ground forces. I didn't like the sea so much, so I went to the ground forces. And then I went to a paramedic course. I was a combat paramedic, and then in the end I instructed paramedics.
Well, it sounds like you stayed in more than 4 years.
No, it took 3 years for me.
Only
and
three
then,
years?
Yeah, but then every year you go for reserve forces for 1 month to 7 weeks. So you to keep on your abilities and your...
To say that you're still fit.
Exactly, you're still fit. Right. So I did
Do they have the weight thing? Because they've changed that in the U.S. weight. When I was in, you couldn't be but a certain weight. According to your size and your height.
Yeah. No, well, well, if you are a paratrooper like my son, you have to have a certain weight.
Right. But if you you're not, you can be kind of plump.
Well,
you can be plump and
well,
be.
Well, I believe that it's easier to be a combat soldier when you are fit and you can run and you can have some exercises. But we do have some soldiers that have some extra weight, but I think during the service they are losing more, many kilograms. Yeah.
That's interesting because I've seen how the services have changed because it's not necessarily people doing it anymore. Mm. It's our machines.
But we recruit everybody.
The army, I understand, yours is everyone.
Yeah, the army in Israel, you know, it's kind of everybody goes to the army.
Everyone
it
has
doesn't
to.
Doesn't matter how high you are, how what's your weight, what's your color of your eyes, you go. Everybody goes, except if you have the ultra-Orthodox that they don't go.
Or if you have an illness or something.
Exactly.
That exempts you.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
So tell me, in high school, now you finished junior high, you went to elementary, you've done all that. Where did your interest start to focus in on? Because high school, I think, is when it starts to happen.
Right.
Or maybe does it happen after you do your bar mitzvah? Because in Israel, you become a man. That's when you become an adult.
Yeah, yeah. 13
That's
is
it.
The
13, right?
Yeah, it's the age when and 12 for girls.
For girls, right.
13 is your bar mitzvah. It's right. The special ceremony when you are reading the Torah, the Bible, and you are going and you become a man, a grown up, let's say.
Was your father really, he was an Orthodox?
No, my grandfather was an Orthodox. He was a rabbi.
You remember him?
No.
Okay.
No.
Your father's father?
Yes.
Okay.
He was a rabbi, a very big rabbi, but we became secular. My father became secular. Mm-hmm. Of course, we are still traditional. You know, I'm doing the reading on Shabbat, and Yom Kippur, I'm going to synagogue with Ambassador Emmanuel, and together, and we pray and Rosh Hashanah the first year. But
he's Jewish too?
Yeah, Ram is Jew. Yeah, he's Jewish.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Ram Israel Emmanuel. Yeah, Emmanuel. Ram Emmanuel is a Hebrew name.
Okay, I didn't know that. Okay.
And a good friend. And we, you asked me about high school.
Yes.
I think then I started to form myself that I like, let's say, the political science, the political meaning. There was a combination between two things for me. How did I become a diplomat, let's say?
Right.
And, you know, you are right. It begins to shape when you are in high school and then you go to the army. There are two things. One, I was in the Boy Scouts. I was an instructor. I was, you know, leading people.
From what? From what grade?
I was 14, 14, 15.
The first
16.
Time you got into the Boy Scouts?
Yeah, well, I got to the Boy Scouts when I was 8. But
did you do Cub Scouts? You did a Cub Scouts? Did you ever? Because it's Cub Scouts, Boy Scouts, then I think Eagle Scouts.
No, it's called in Israel the Tzofim, the Boy Scouts.
That's
all the things. There are several others, but so. I liked very much my country. I used to take my people from the Boy Scouts when they were 6, 7, 8 grade, and we went to camps and we went to travel Israel, and I was reading from them from the Bible to show them that the connectivity between what we do now, where we are, for example, in the Cave of David near the Dead Sea, when there is a story in the Bible where David was there and Shaul, the king of Israel, went to wash his head, and then David came from the cave and cut his shirt, and he told him, "You see, I was able to kill you, but I didn't want to kill you." So when you tell these stories,
you were telling this to
from the Bible, and you connect yourself. So you connect the Jewish people, my people, to this land. This is our land. So it's something that you have to be connected. History is 3,500 years ago, but it's written, it's there, and you can show them. So, and then my love for my country, and then I was going for Germany. I went to Germany for exchange of youth exchange, and I went, it's very emotional because you speak with a German youth about the Holocaust, about things that happened, and you try to really talk about these kind of things and to learn from it. And I remember that we went to the Israeli embassy. It used to be in Bonn there before Germany was united. And we met a diplomat, and the diplomat told us about what he does and where he's going and what
he's
doing.
Are you 14 now?
I was 16 there.
16, okay. 16.
And then I said to myself, that's interesting, because it's a combination between curiosity that I had to see the world, to explore things, to taste things, to smell, to know different cultures, different languages, and my affiliation, my passion to my country. So when you combine these two things, I said, maybe to be a diplomat is a good idea.
Now, was that the first time you left Israel at 16?
Yes, I think so, yeah.
So that, all yeah. that was exciting for you.
Exactly.
First time leaving?
First time, exactly.
Was it first time on a plane? It could have been.
I think so. Maybe so, I was on a plane to Eilat, the south of Israel. So maybe, right. But it's inside Israel.
But all this was just really exciting for you. So you're really hyped anyway.
Right.
So then you meet this ambassador. It wasn't an ambassador, but you meet this diplomat.
Yeah, he was not ambassador. He was a diplomat. We met him and we asked some questions, and he told us about what they did and what they are doing. You know, what are the missions? You know, there is the political one, there is the economic one, public relations, consular things. Serving your country, serving the flag, and it's not easy life also to be an Israeli diplomat, you know, because of security, because of threats, because, you know, we had diplomats around the world that were hurt or killed because of their Israelis. But I thought that it is a very interesting place to work in an embassy. It is interesting. It is. I love it very much.
Okay.
But you have to pay prices. We can talk about it later.
We'll get into that. So you go through. You finish that. That's your first encounter with finding out possibly what you'd want to do as you grew up. Right. Then what happened? Then you left. You come back.
I come back. I graduated high school.
What kind of degree?
Well, I had.
Well, you major in it.
My major was sociology and political science, and I was not good in mathematics and chemistry. And
That means the teacher wasn't good. That's all that means.
Well,
because think about the subjects you do well in. I'm a teacher, so I say that all the time, and I used to take a lot of. I was really feeling bad about me not being able to read well and everything. I didn't have good teachers. Mm. If the teacher's good and understands you. And how you receive it well, that's their job.
Yeah.
Then you would have started to enjoy it.
Right.
But if they just pass by you or just think, here's the exam, do your best.
Right.
Well, that's why you
didn't
like
math. I think you're right. I think my children had a better teachers. This is why there are more five units of mathematics.
Well, another thing, too, I don't know if your parents had the time to really go and see your teachers like you do to see theirs. Because teachers will pay more attention to the kids whose parents come. Than they will the parents who don't. If you're there, the teacher has a little bit of pressure.
I agree.
And they say, okay, I'm going to watch, you know, his kids because he's here.
I agree.
Well, another one.
So that makes involvement is very important.
It's very important. I did that with all four of my sons.
Right.
I made sure all sons. I have four sons, 37 to 31.
All right.
And they all came back. My wife's Japanese, so they all came back here after I sent them out. So
they came back to Japan.
They came back to Japan. Why would you leave paradise after you've lived in it? But you don't know that until you leave.
Mm, yeah.
And when you leave, then you start realizing, wait, this works.
Mm.
The other places aren't working quite well.
Mm.
There's a system. And they had over 3,000 years to figure it all out.
Mm, yeah.
There no this place is, I can go on and on. That's a whole other subject.
All right.
So you finished, then you really started to think, okay, you had to go in the service right away then after that?
Yeah, after that.
You didn't go to college?
No. In Israel, you go to college after you graduate, you finish your army service.
So you're 20?
I went to university. After the army service, you want to clear up your mind. So you go abroad. You go to a long trips. I went to the Far East. I went to Thailand, to Nepal, India, some Japan.
Why? Why did you decide the Far East?
I went also to South America afterwards. Okay. I came back and I went there. It was 7 months and 6 months, almost 13 months together that I went there. And my sons did it as well. Because you feel like you want to relax. You feel like you want to clear your mind. You feel that after your army service, after things you've done, after things you've seen, you were going through, you want to enjoy life. You want to wake up in the morning to see the sunrise, to drink some orange juice or something, and to enjoy and to just travel and to see and to explore and to have treks and hikes. And so it was funny because a few months ago, my son was traveling in the Far East also. And he has a foreign passport, general passport, so we could have gone to places that I couldn't go, for example, to Indonesia and other places that Israel doesn't have diplomatic relations, but he came to Japan to visit his father, And he told me, whoa, I was living in a guest houses of $5 per night or $10 because I didn't have money. And then I came to the ambassador residence. Whoa, that's great. So it's kind of closing a circle.
But you'd been in this is your first term as an ambassador?
Yes, I was four times a diplomat, starting in Brazil. And then I went to Turkey. My two sons were born in Brazil. I went to Turkey and then I went back to Israel. You have to go back every now and then. And then I went to New York to the Israeli mission to the United Nations. And I went for Israel for almost 13 years because my kids went to the to school in high school. And then in 2021, I arrived in Japan.
So your kids never lived outside of Israel?
They did.
Where?
They
Which
did
one?
In Brazil.
For how long?
3 years.
3 years, okay.
And then 2 years in Turkey, Ankara. And then my daughter was born before we went to New York, but they were living in Tenafly, New Jersey for 4 years. We loved it there.
I bet you did.
And their English is much better than their father, much better. They have the American accent.
They can do it?
I envy them, you know. I envy them because they speak English, right? They speak American English and just that. Sometimes they're laughing at my mistakes and my, I was born not in the US.
But can they speak Hebrew too?
They speak Hebrew.
Hebrew, they do.
That's just Hebrew. Hebrew, and of course, they have a very good English. They used to speak Portuguese when my son was born in Brazil. Used to say to me, Dad, I want a banana.
Banana.
A Brazilian, very heavy accent. And my second son was used to talk in, used to speak in Turkish. He knew Turkish.
Okay.
Yeah, so. But today, I don't think.
What about your daughter? She probably picked up everything.
She was born just before New York, but the mission.
9/11.
And she came. We were there between 2004, 2008.
Okay.
So she came when she was 4 years old. She didn't pick up so much. She used to be.
So she has
English.
The same accent you do.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
You want it.
I'm trying to change it.
No, you're not.
Come on. I said, I'm Israeli.
No, you want it. You wanted to be like that. That's daddy's little girl. Come on.
Yeah. So, yeah.
That's nice.
But my sons, when they speak English, you know, it's kind of.
They do. It,
American English. Yeah, it's kind of. All right. Yeah, have their nose up.
A little bit, yes.
Exactly. But it's okay. I think it's a gift for them. It's a gift because, and I really believe in it. I think the American, and they went to public schools in Tenafly, New Jersey.
In America. Okay.
And I think they learned things that really gave them tools for life, which we didn't get it in Israel as I was a pupil, a student. And you were a teacher, so they've been, the respect to teacher, the respect to school, the respect to studies, the homeworks, how you make a presentation.
Wait, you're saying you didn't get that in Israel?
No.
But you think they did in the U.S.?
Yes. I think the American system.
Well, they had a good school then.
They had a good
very
school.
Very good school. Even though it was public, but you in a good area, you had a good school.
Yeah, Tenafly. I think they have a very good school
there.
And I think, and I was very proud and I was very happy because I see now, when they are, my son is 27 mm-hmm. and the other one is 25, how they think, how these 4 years there in America really changed their life, really made them in a different mm-hmm. focus, how they respect elders, how they respect authority, how they respect teachers. You know, in Israel, you don't say for the teachers, they say Miss Yun, Mr. Faber, for the principal. In Israel, you call
by their name.
By their name. And that's the Israeli way. It's kind of
more familiar.
More familiar, exactly.
But there's one thing, Mr. Ambassador. I would say this: our children don't represent our future. Mm. Our children represent our past, because the only thing we can teach them is what we've already learned. Now, on the other hand, what we represent to our children is their possible future. So we owe it to them, but most of all to ourselves, to be all we can be. Your sons are the way they are. I would say the school helped to guide them a little bit because of you. And that's more than anything else, because you're showing them what their future could possibly be. Well, you're the one that's on target. You're the one that's like this. You're the one. And that's why you admired it when you saw it in them. They don't know what's happening. They didn't know at all what was happening. They had no clue. You said what you did to them, you may not have been aware of it, but when they were doing something you liked doing, and they saw that, they wanted to make you happy. you go, that's, oh, your accent's so good. And they go, and you may not have been aware of it, but I've talked with so many parents and worked with so many kids.
I agree.
They want to be, you're showing them what their possible future can be. And you keep on making the hurdle higher and higher and higher. And they're trying their best. I hope I can, because you think about your father all the time.
I do, and you know what? I agree, because I think that, I'm working for my government. I'm working for 30 years, and I see my children now very much dedicated for Israel. You know, on October 7th, after the attack of Hamas, they didn't wait for the army to draft them. And they are civilians now. They finished their army service. They took their bag and they ran to their bases before even they got drafted, only 2 days after the draft was paper came. And I see it also with my daughter now, that she's so much committed when she went to the army. And you know, I think they became good people, a good person, because of their parents. Because you know, I'll take you something else, not regarding, all three of them are exercising. And I didn't say anything to them.
You don't have to.
Exactly, but they saw the wet shirts after the running, and they said to themselves, oh, okay, we have to do this.
They can't stop. If he sees his dad, they're going to end up being the way they see you.
Even without you telling them.
You don't. Your best example is not to say anything. Exactly. Just do it.
Exactly. I agree. 100%.
Just do it. Don't tell them what to be. Show them what they can be.
I agree. Yeah. And this is why I asked them, do you want to be a diplomat? No. They want to be something else.
They want to, because you ask.
Exactly. But they want to serve their country.
That's
and
right.
They want to be good Israelis, and they are patriots. And they went, all three of them, to guide other youngsters to be, it's not like a teachers, but really like some kind of commanders, things to teach and to educate and to
that's
take
right,
people
right,
and to
right.
show them the good way.
That's
and
right, that's right. Well, see, they've seen you as a diplomat too, and they understand the stress you go through, and they see you in those times, and they go, phew. Just like you've seen your father through different situations,
right.
And you watched and you thought, okay, I want to do, because he did that, and I saw what it did
right.
to him,
right.
So I'm going to do this instead.
Right.
So they're going to do the same thing. My sons look at me and what I do, and they're nah. I'm in the public's eye. Mm. You're in the public's eye.
Mm.
My son doesn't want to be.
Yeah.
They basically say, I want to enjoy it without being in the public's eye.
Right.
But we felt we had to be, or we wouldn't be here and enjoying it. I'm public person because I'd rather not be if I had my choices and I could change tomorrow. But now I've learned to love it.
Mm.
I like being with people. I like being around them.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like giving a speech.
Mm.
Always nervous before you get up there, but as soon as the words come out, you get into it, and all of a sudden, you finished it. Oh, that wasn't so bad. That was pretty good.
Right.
Don't you feel that way
I
sometimes?
I feel that. Yeah, I know what you mean, and I like it as well. I think this is diplomacy as well. You have to go. I came to this interview. I didn't know even what we're going to talk. But you know,
I can tell right away. But see, I saw you down there. You were in the club, and we had that event.
Right.
And when I went to Yoav and I said, you know, he said, I'll introduce you to the ambassador. I said, sure. And then I asked you, I could tell by your outgoings. I saw the way you were hugging my ambassador, the way you hugged him and stuff. It was you. You were initiating all of it. When I asked you, you said, right, I wasn't too surprised. You said, I'll do it. You didn't know anything about it. But when you know inside who you are, it doesn't matter what they throw at you.
Thank you. Yeah, I think you're right.
It's true. When you know what's, I can see, and I think people can see people of that ilk. If you're confident, come at me.
Yeah.
The worst you can do is do something I'm going to have to do anyway.
Yeah. Well, you're right.
That's
thank
how
you,
it is, don't you think?
No, I think so. And, you know, I told my spokesperson at the embassy, you know, before, after this war broke, I told her, listen, whoever wants me, even which program, I don't care. Just bring it on. I believe in what I do. I believe in myself. I believe in my country, and I believe that we are right. And I am willing to talk to anybody on anything, wherever, whenever. Now, it takes kind of, you have to to build up these things. It doesn't, you know,
no.
You have to be comfortable with cameras. You have to be comfortable when on TV and or others. But I think it's, after so many years, I think,
but this is your first post as an ambassador, too.
It is.
And you're making democracy, being a diplomat a career. This is your career.
Yeah, this is my career. Yeah. After I was the head of Asia and Pacific division in the foreign ministry before I came here. So let's say I have an opportunity. I had the opportunity to choose, and I said Tokyo. I think with Japan is it's because I had some other opportunities around the world, especially in Asia. But I said to myself that with Japan we can really take it higher and higher, and we did. And we are doing it, and I think Japan as well is getting so much closer, and we are doing a lot of job.
So how do you succeed? Okay, since my podcast is going to change its name from Lancey Lee's Podcast in Tokyo to Success in Japan, how do you become successful? What do you consider success to be as far as your job goes in Japan?
In Japan, well, first of all, you have to understand that we came to a different culture. And we came to a different, that people do things differently. Everything is different, and everything, we have to respect each other. We have to listen. We have to speak quietly. We have to be considerable, and we have to. And then, when you understand this, and when you understand, and you try to see, to identify the ways that you can do both things together. Where are you matching your interests? Where are the places that you and that Israel and Japan can do things together that will be good and beneficial for both sides? And I think because of the geostrategic, let's say, movements with China and Russia and Ukraine and North Korea and others, and where Israel is and the United States and everything together, I think that first of all, to understand and to love the place. I think because I love Japan, I love the food, I love the people, I love the culture, I love the landscape. I love running in Tokyo. I love it. So, and when you love it, you have the passion for it, and you, of course, you love your country first and foremost. These two loves can combine. It's great, and I think that this is why I'm so happy here. And
how did your predecessor? Okay, because you didn't just come here without Japan having any relationships with Israel. So you're not the first ambassador,
years,
right?
Yeah, okay. 70 years
so you have a predecessor who might have set a stage that could be different than yours.
Yes.
So how do you mingle that? How do you succeed with that or in spite of that?
Well, my sister, she was the ambassador before me. The problem that she had COVID then. And COVID shut down everything, and also especially here in Japan, so it was very, very difficult to make.
But also, you said she.
She, yeah, she, yeah.
This country is not a she country necessarily.
Well, I wouldn't want to comment on the.
You can't. But let's just. We can say one thing for sure: it's male dominated, and that's for sure. And it has been for centuries. Mm. Right.
But it's easier for me to go to izakaya with friends from the Gaimushu and from
than she would
and from and the public sector and the private sector, but I think she did a good job, and I think she was very much accepted here. I think that I'm trying to do whatever I can because we are working according to a plan. We are working together with friends here. We identify the mutual interest of both countries. And when the Japanese understand and they feel that you like them, that you are into their culture, that you know, if you tell me, let's go to eat, I have my Italian friend, but I have pasta or pizza in a restaurant, I said, let's go to izakaya, let's go to have sushi, let's go to have ramen or udon or tempura or something. Let's go to the Japanese. You know, pasta I can eat everywhere, but this one, the perfect Japanese cuisine is something that really, really amazes me. And I think that when the other side understand that you like it, that you try to absorb the culture. Unfortunately, I didn't have much time to learn the language. You know, where I started and then I had to work. It's really something that I think that both sides can be happy, and I'm very, very happy, and I think that my Japanese colleagues understand that I'm happy here, and I like
it. How much time do you have here? You've been here, you said, how long now?
Yeah, I have 2 years, and I have two to three more years.
Two to three more years. Can you extend that?
Well, usually it's 4 years, and you can extend it to five.
And that's the max?
That's the maximum, yeah, until five.
But then
years.
Couldn't you go back for a year and then come back for another five?
Maybe. maybe.
It's been done, I'm sure.
Not here in Japan, I don't think so.
It hasn't been done here.
Not in Japan.
No, but I mean, on the U.S. side, it has been. We've had a rice hour, yes. Our Mansfield, I think he stayed.
That's a good idea.
Mansfield, he was here for a long time.
I'll ask the next foreign minister, maybe.
He did. Because if you're effective, what's the whole purpose of being an ambassador?
Right.
To make sure your two countries have a good connection, no matter what happens.
I agree.
That's the whole point.
I agree. And you know, after 2 years, I admit that really we made a lot, huge progress. We have direct flights, first time ever, between Tel Aviv Airport and Narita Airport. Twice a week. It will be resumed in March because it stopped there, but it's going to be an ongoing line. We are talking about free trade agreement with Japan, investment. I've just signed 2 days ago a note verbal for the Guy Musho, for the foreign ministry here, saying that Israel has completed all the procedures in order to have a working holiday visa, which means the 200 Israelis can come here for a year, and 200 Japanese can come to Israel for a year to work and to travel. You know, when you are young, between 18 to 30, you don't have money. You are
so starting when?
Starting in 90 days. 90 days from now.
Because I need some interns that know good, that are good with podcasts and stuff.
Well, let's work for it. And you know, so many other things, and investments, and visits, and high-level visits, and so many things of agreements, and of really also on defense, you know, things that have never happened before. We are working with Japan on defense issues. And you can see in every field, and culture, and science, and space, and health, so in an academy. So in every place you touch, you can see really flourishing. I call it the sakura of relations between Japan and Israel after 70 years. And I don't think it's because there is a... It's me as the ambassador.
You've been Japan and Israel have been together for 70 years?
Yes, but the relations were cold before. In 1973, Japan has surrendered to our boycott. You know, the Palestinian issue, it was not so good.
Because that was, during what years? That was in 1970s?
73.
That's right, 73. Because Arafat, he had a place here. I remember where it was at. It was in Daikanyama, and he had a picture of himself.
Really?
And he had property. They sold their property here too. Yes.
Yeah. They have the.
That's right.
The representation of the Palestinians still today.
They sure do.
And
they still have it today.
Yeah.
But where is it located now? It's not.
I think
in
they moved. Not in Daikanyama.
Because they sold that property, I think.
Yeah,
they did.
Yeah.
They've
I think
got
they
quite
moved
a bit.
I'm not sure where exactly. No, I don't remember. But here in the city.
But they never had anyone like him again.
Who?
Like Arafat, the Palestinians.
Well, he was their leader of the PLO.
He
but,
was, yes.
Yeah, but I think that it's, you know, when I the relations now between Israel and Japan are like, I think it's a natural matureness of relations for so many years, but the time has come, and because what I said, because also the U.S. and others and things, and I have to admit also that the friendship with the U.S. ambassador is also contributing a lot for.
It doesn't hurt at all.
Yeah,
it does not hurt at all.
And he's a good friend. Yeah. He's a good friend and a good man and an American patriot, but a good friend of Israel. And I think we get along also on our personal lives. We
have it looks
friends.
Like it. It looks like when I saw you two together, I thought you were related.
Yeah. We are different. We are friends,
yes.
And I'm very proud to be considered a friend of Ambassador Emmanuel. And our wives are also friends. And
you know, he's here every morning.
Yeah, I know.
He comes here every morning religiously. He didn't make it this morning for some reason, but still.
Yeah. Well, I shouldn't talk about it because of security reasons.
Oh, that's true.
But I know, and he's very much. We climbed together Mount Fuji, and there is this special.
Only once, I hope.
Once, yes.
Okay, yes.
And we have this. This very very famous. It was also in Israeli television and Israeli newspaper that they had the famous flag of us standing with the flag of the United States,
mm-hmm.
Israel, and Japan on Mount Fuji.
Wait,
Israel.
When you guys went up there, did you both have your security come with you too?
Yes.
That tickles me because those guys probably were not too happy about that.
Well, it's okay. It's guys that are trained to
whatever you do, they have to
Mount
do, yeah.
Fuji, and we ski together and we dive and it's okay. So I love Japan. I told you that I love very much Japan, so I'm trying to explore. We just went to Hokkaido just before the war in August. I loved it so much, and we were planning to go on to Okinawa and other places, but we are going to do it after war stops in Israel. So, but I think the landscape is amazing here. People are saying to me, why won't we go? We want to go to Thailand or to the desert. Why? I want to see Japan first. Let me explore more and more of Japan, and then I'll go to other places.
That's good. You do have a very, very good, healthy relationship with this country and attitude. That's the most important thing. Your attitude is going to take you wherever you want to go. Mm-hmm. And I think your kids will see that. Other people will see that, that aspire to be where you're at now, you know, in the diplomatic corps, people that might want to be ambassador someday. I think you might want to consider having an openness and be as friendly and as accepting. And it's inside out. It's not outside in.
I agree.
Being an ambassador didn't make you who you are. You make being an ambassador something worthy of people wanting to be a part of.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah,
don't you believe that?
Yeah, I believe in that. Yeah, I believe that it's what you bring to post, what you bring to this task, and if you believe in it, and if you like the other side. I won't say that that it's all smooth. You know, sometimes you have different opinions. You try. You know, I want Japan to vote for me at the Security Council, and this way they think differently, or the UN. But it's okay. You conduct your conversation in a very good way, a respectful way. You listen to the other side. You have to hear what he has to say, and you try to move it into your direction. But I think that it's right. I think I love this job. I love.
It's obvious. That's obvious.
I love this job. I think it's the best job that I can ever wished for. And I was dreaming about it since I was 16. And I went to study in the college and university in Mount Scopus in Jerusalem, political science and international relations. And then I went to the cadet course of the foreign ministry. And then we started our. But I want to say also that if somebody from the audience want to be a diplomat or ambassador, I think it's a great job, but you have to sometimes think about the pros and cons, because sometimes it's not easy to be alone. I'm alone now because my kids are in the army, my wife is in Israel now, so sometimes you stay here by yourself. It's not so easy to be far away from the family, from the friends, the real friends that we have in Israel, and it's also not so easy for the kids, because you go as a career diplomat, you have to change your
they
post
tell you
every
when
few
you're
years.
Go, yeah.
I said that I'd be here 4 to 5 years. But
that's up to them. It's not up to you. Yeah.
Exactly. And then you take them out, you uproot them, and you try to plant them again. You uproot them. And think about kids that are 6, 7, 8 years old or in high school. It's difficult because you have to build yourself inside new school with new friends, with new teacher. You have to put yourself inside the society. How you know that to be with the good guys, to be with the acceptable one that there are, and it's not easy. So there are prices to be paid for the family. You have to take care of your spouse's job. You know, she is my wife is a psychologist, a social worker. She went to Fordham University when I was in there, so she had a second degree from Fordham University in New York. But it's not easy because her job is in Israel, and you cut her career, and you uproot her, and you take her to another place. So what is she going to do there? What is she going to do there? So here, for example, in Tokyo, we have this solution, because when she's here, she's working by Zoom. So she can treat people as a psychologist by Zoom, which is okay. But you know, sometimes people prefer to come for a psychologist. So there are prices for it. It's not all pink.
Right.
There are some things that you have to think before you take this job, because it's not a walk in a park, let's say.
That's for sure. That's for sure. Tell me, before we end this podcast, I always ask this question. If you could magically go back in time, knowing what you know now, and meet the younger Ambassador Cohen, your first name is?
Gilad.
Meet the younger Gilad and give him advice. How old would he be, and what advice would you give him?
I would tell him, know where you want to go, what you want to achieve, what do you want to be when you're grown up, and do it. If you ask me if I would change something in my life, in my course, no, I would take the same course. But when I'm speaking to youngsters, young diplomats in the foreign ministry, you know, a few years, and they have the same problems, or they have the same thoughts, or thinking of, should we do it, should we leave it, maybe we should you know, my wife is having difficulties, the kids, maybe I would. And I'm asking them, think of yourself 15 years from now, 10 to 15 years from now, where do you want to be? You want to be ambassador in Tokyo? You want to be a banker? You want to be a teacher? You want to be a policeman? Whatever, it's okay. Everything that you have to have, you will have a meaning. Do it for yourself. It doesn't matter what you are. Just have a meaning for what you do. And for me, meaningful is to be a diplomat, to represent my country. And I'm very lucky to be in such a beautiful and marvelous place like Japan.
Ambassador Cohen, thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Hans. Thank
That's
you for having
fantastic.
Me.
I want to thank all of you for watching or listening to this podcast. And never forget, it's all on loan, so continue to reach for the stars.
Because you're too blessed to be stressed.